My name is James McMahon. I have obsessive compulsive disorder. Obsessive compulsive disorder, or OCD, is a mental disorder in which the person has repeated thoughts called obsessions, or feels the need to perform routines repeatedly. They might be external or internal. They're called compulsions. To an extent that generates distress or impairs general functioning. I've had it for over 20 years, not that I knew I had it for a long time. We call OCD the Downton disorder. It's much misunderstood. Treatment is difficult to come by. Anyone tuning in from the UK will be aware of the crisis point that UK mental health services hit some time ago. At least without paying vast sums of money, but it can be effective. I'm on a journey. I was diagnosed in 2008 when I was 28. I ignored it. My flat was messy. I didn't have OCD. 10 years later, I had what may well have been a breakdown. I fought for another diagnosis. I got it. I've had some treatment now, cognitive behavioural therapy and some ERP, that's exposure response prevention, and I'll get into that on a future episode. My condition has come close to ruining my life, even taking it from me, and I'm far from recovered. Sometimes I'm not sure I ever will be, but I'm in the fight. The OCD Chronicle started as a website, a place to document OCD stories, to celebrate bravery and cheer on other sufferers. And it's a podcast now, and it's here to do a similar thing. But I also want to chart my own story. I want to be better, so badly I want to be better. I'll introduce you to the people I meet on this journey. Mental health professionals, researchers, other sufferers. Join me. If you have OCD and you spend time on Twitter, not always the best combination. You will most likely know Shearer is inspired. A great and brave advocate for OCD awareness. But behind every OCD sufferer is a loved one. And in Shearer's case, it's her mum, Sharon Goldman. Loving someone with OCD is hard. There's little support for OCD sufferers, and even less for parents, partners and friends. So how best to support a child with OCD? Obviously, I know your daughter a little bit from Twitter and feel like she's made such an impact on the OCD community in recent months. You must be really proud.
Oh, man. Of course, I am so proud and beyond proud, just really impressed, you know, what she's been able to do for herself, you know, and how she's been able to share so much of herself and be so out there.
Yeah, no, it is amazing. What I really wanted to talk to you about, because for the podcast, for each episode, I'm sort of trying to explore a little bit of my own experience with OCD, but by speaking to people who have some expertise on those particular subjects. So what I really wanted to talk about this week was about parents and being a parent of an OCD sufferer. And I thought that there was probably no one really better to speak to you about this other than my own mum than yourself. My mum may well end up being on this podcast at some point, but for now, I think that you're perfect for the role. Tell me a bit about when Shearer first started to be ill and how you found that.
Okay, so Shearer's first symptoms started to appear when she was around 8. She was in second grade. And there were a number of things that just kind of popped up. and it took a while to put them together. You know, her, it seemed like her first fear, which I don't, it wasn't, it was around getting a fever. And actually, you know, there had been someone at her school who knew someone who died, like a camp counselor. And there was like a big fear of death going around. So at first it seemed like, okay, these, we're having some normal fears. And then she started doing, you know, the, she started doing what we now understand as reassurance seeking. She'd get in the backseat of the car, start doing, you know, holding her neck. And, do you think I have a fever? Do you think I'm sick? No, darling, of course not. So, right, just the typical road that most parents go down. And of course, we're going to try to reassure our children. The more disturbing rituals came pretty shortly after that, in which Shira started to restrict her food. So at first this came as like, you know, I think I'd like to have fruit for my snack instead of, you know, the pretzels. Okay, of course, what mother doesn't want her child to have fruit instead of pretzels? What a great choice. What a smart kid she is.
Yeah, yeah.
And, you know, and then it started to go from there. She started to skip snack, reduce her food, and she slowly started, you know, losing weight. And which was terrifying. It was absolutely terrifying. And I mean, there's, you know, we got her into a therapist who was known as the quote unquote worry doctor. And she continued to lose weight. The therapist did not recognize the OCD. The therapist gave me the great, she gave me some great advice and some horrible advice, and I will say they were conflicting, and they sort of kind of reflect sort of different attitudes around parenting and different, you know, sort of wisdom around parenting. You know, one being very good, if your child is conflicted, right, and you take a stand on one side, right, then it gives your child only one place to go, which is the other side. So don't be in conflict with your child. Try to be on the same side, right? Smart. Or, but then the other piece of advice she gave, which is kind of a more standard, you know, we set boundaries, you know, parents set the structures, parents set the rules, is, you know, you go home and you say, it's 3 o'clock, it's snack time, and you have snack. Okay. So you have OCD, right? So you're telling this to a child who has undiagnosed OCD at that point, right? And I'm just pleading with her, we're going to eat. Of course, here's where you know the contradiction is, because now I'm in the exact same place as she had told me to, the therapist has told me to stay out of, right? You got that? So like I'm saying eat, the OCD is like no, no, no. And anyway, I make it sound funny, but it was pretty horrifying and terrifying. And she continued to lose weight. And I know we were very fortunate at some point. We got her in for some testing, which honestly did not get us to an OCD diagnosis, but to get to a therapist who eventually made that diagnosis.
Was that, I mean, as any sufferer will know, or anyone who loves a sufferer will know, OCD is so misunderstood and that term is thrown around so yes. Flippantly. What was your reaction to hearing the diagnosis?
To some degree, I was relieved because once we had a diagnosis, the therapist we were working with at the time, he thought it was a phobia at first, and he was not having luck with her ERPs, because you run ERPs were a little different for phobia than for OCD, and so it was a little bit of a relief, because at that point the therapist was able to say, okay, now I know what to do. And honestly, I didn't really fully understand OCD until many, many years later. So on the one hand, yeah, I said it was sort of a relief. We had a diagnosis. There was a plan. There was progress. And at the same time, I was under the misimpression, and it was a word, I was that there was a cure. I mean, because my therapist kept saying, "Oh, well, we'll stamp it out." Like, because you know, we would talk about how OCD is like whack-a-mole. One thing comes up, you know, then something else. You get that one. He kept saying, using the term "stamp it out," and I heard that as she'll get this will go away,
right?
And so the real reality. The real reality, the reality sunk in when at our first OCD con. She must have been 14 by then. She was, I think she was between a freshman and sophomore years. And I don't know why it took, well, we can talk about that, why it took us so long. But I remember sitting in a session and hearing the words chronic brain disorder. And okay. And it was very hard to hear and also important.
I think sometimes it's a bit of a generational thing. My story's crazy. I didn't get diagnosed for years and years and years and years. And my mum has been very supportive with me. But I think there was a bit of a thing for a while where her dad had some, my grandfather had some serious mental illness, and there was always a bit of, my mum would never be, she would never say she was ashamed of her dad at all, like she adored her dad, but her childhood was definitely influenced by her dad being ill. And I think in a weird way, almost like the response to mental illness was almost to combat it with strength, as opposed to sort of getting into the nuts and bolts about it. What was you, did you have much of an understanding of mental illness before?
Well, yes and no. I mean, my husband has suffered with depression and anxiety, so I've lived up close to it. And he had an episode. He's never been diagnosed with OCD. He's taken a Y-box test, you know, but right. he did have what I would consider an obsessive compulsive episode that was frightening. And that said, no, you know, I grew up in the 70s.
Yeah.
I mean,
yeah.
No one talked about it.
Yeah.
No one talked about it. It's funny though. I remember going to see the movie about Howard Hughes. It's funny, I was just looking at something I wrote.
Oh, the Aviator.
I remember my husband just being just very, you know, so disturbed by it. And, you know, at that point, not really, I don't think he was even had been diagnosed with anxiety. I think he just thought he had depression. He didn't sort of realize that was the secondary thing. Anyway, you know, yeah, maybe from the movies, and particularly that movie.
Yeah, that movie was quite poignant for me, because even though my themes are very different to what Leonardo DiCaprio depicts in that movie, I really related to the anguish that he felt. I really did feel like it was almost the first time I'd kind of seen myself. And this was years before I knew what my problem was OCD. Movies are brilliant.
No, it was a fantastic movie. It's probably it's probably the only screen representation that comes close to, like you said, with what's underneath it, was that anguish. And maybe, it, you know, because it was urine, you know, rather than, you know, something that might not be, things are pretty horrifying. Let's not. In words, but it was disturbing. It was disturbing and hard, hard to watch.
Yes,
it's hard to watch anyone who's suffering with it.
No, absolutely. So you were saying that it took you some time to understand it.
Yeah.
How did you come to understand it?
Going to OCDCon. Honestly, the source. I don't know. Why? I mean, it's not that we didn't understand aspects of it from our therapists, and it's not like we hadn't read anything about it. And oddly, you know, I'm someone who tends to read a lot, for some reason, I trusted the experts. I have, it's funny, our first therapist is a university professor, as an academic, and I have an academic background, and I trusted, and which wasn't a bad thing to do. He certainly got her to a certain point, but once we went to OCDCon and realized that we weren't getting all the information, or that we didn't, we knew not to give reassurances, we knew not to pour, not to pour fire on fuel on the fire. We knew, the basics. No, but really, OCDCon was such a wealth of actual information. Oh, the first time we heard hypochondriasis. Now, it sure probably didn't have hypochondriasis. She had a lot of things that were secondary to emetophobia. Her OCD, you later learned, had attached to her emetophobia. But she, the fever stuff and the fear of getting sick. Like, we didn't even know that there were these themes in OCD. We never heard of them. That was the first thing. Someone said hypochondriasis, and I was like, what? And then, so we went. Our first year was Chicago. We went in San Francisco. And every year that we went, we learned more and we understood more. And actually, we met Lisa Coyne, who is the founder of the OCDI Junior at McLean at OCDCon. And that changed our lives. I think there were actually two, that came out of it. But honestly, the education, we would go to session after session and just take notes upon notes upon notes. So we learned about the, individual themes of OCD. There were lots of things for parents, and not just the basics, right? There were things about school, things about, I remember one year there was a great presentation about talking about your child to their, and addressing their other emotions besides anxiety, right? I have to say, I will tell you though, we didn't go to OCDCon for many, many years because our lives were all, I felt, and this was like so ignorant, I felt like, oh God, all our lives are already taken up by OCD. Why would we want to go and spend like 4 days in a hotel talking about OCD,
Oh, absolutely, absolutely. the amount of times, it's so all-consuming. Like, as an illness, obviously, it's all about thought, so it takes up so much of your brain space anyway. But also, I feel like once you realize that this is what you are, then even aside from the treatment, there's such a relief or a feeling of belonging or a feeling of now I understand myself, that it sort of takes over your life. Sometimes doing this podcast, I'm loving doing this podcast. It's really great to connect with people, but sometimes I sort of know I've got to do one, and I think more OCD, just what I needed,
I hear that. I'm writing a memoir about parenting OCD, and,
yeah, I thought this sounds really exciting.
I have some friends in the wellness business, and they really questioned me. It's just, do you really, 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 is this what you want to do? You want to go back in there? Because right. They're not writers. They didn't understand that writing is is a transformative experience. It's not a, like, sit in the muck and,
And you also, you have to, I'm a journalist and I write about OCD so often, and you have to write about what and you have to write about what you're curious about, and that's even before what you're saying, that it is transformative to process this stuff by putting it on a page,
And it is what and it's also a little bit what you don't know, because things happen so fast, right? Life goes, we're in the midst of it. You do one thing and then the next. And certainly as a parent of a kid with OCD, you're always, or my experience was, we're always trying to figure out how we could get her the kind of support that she needed. And it was so all consuming. And in the last year, before, when we first went to McLean, And then when we returned to McLean, we were so intense. There was really no time to stop and think about what was happening.
Yeah.
And although I knew at the time, like, I knew I was changing. I knew I had changed.
Yeah.
As a result of it. And I knew I had changed for the better, which is, you know, not to say that, oh, it's in a great, my daughter got sick, so I could have this transformational experience. No. But I knew that it had, you know, demanded something of me. And I wanted to understand that. I wanted, you know, writing kind of can also sort of bring you to the present of your life, right? So you go back and you kind of trace your steps and then you kind of understand where you are.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. Yeah. No, completely. Yeah. Are you finding the experience of writing it? I imagine that there's a lot of emotion in writing it.
Yeah, you know, it's interesting. There, you know, as you know, there's different steps to the writing process. You know, there's a kind of getting things out. You know, I write by hand and just sort of getting things out and trying to remember. And that's the real sort of, you go in, that's where you start to sort of move things through, right? So they're not stuck inside you. And so they may be hard to go back, but you're letting things move through you. Then that for me, then there's like getting it sort of into the computer, kind of shaping it into scenes and how someone's going to understand it. And then you start to get a little bit of distance.
Right? Yeah.
Because then you're making something.
Yeah.
I'm thinking about someone else. How is someone else going to understand this? And it doesn't mean it's not really, that doesn't continue to be hard. Some parts are, you know, sure, I had a couple of admissions to inpatient for suicidality that were related to the OCD, obviously. And that was the hardest part to write. I actually went away to write about it and wrote about it like one or two pages at a time in the morning and then went off and did something else. That's the place where I get the most triggered still.
You were saying about how committed you were to making sure that Shira had the right support. Sometimes one of the things I think that we don't talk about enough with OCD is the support that is needed for the people who love people with OCD.
Oh, thank you for saying that. Thank you for saying that. I so appreciate that. And that's a little bit of my mission. But I will say when we were going through the worst of it, there were no parent support groups where we live in Austin. There are now, which is wonderful. Of course, there are the parents, amazing parent support groups at OCDCon, but there's not that ongoing support and training. You know, oh God, my mind's going to explode. Let me just, okay, let's go one thing at a time. We were fortunate. We actually found a parenting, you know, coach who was a therapist, but didn't like to operate as a therapist. She was trained as a therapist, but she considered herself a parenting coach. And she coached us through some pretty rough times but was also incredibly compassionate. Because I think that's the one thing, it's so isolating. That's another reason I started to write. I felt so isolated and alone. And it was just a way for me to kind of reach out. But it was like one person, you know, who was there and as sort of a witness. Because it's very, as you know, it's very hard for anyone to understand and to stop and explain OCD to your friends and family. It's like a doctoral dissertation. There's some, you know, because there's so many ins and outs of it. And what about this? And what about that? And anyway, it's funny. I did start writing kind of thinking I wanted to be seen. Like, I'm so tired. I wanted people just to understand what this was and what my family was going through. But really, again, this is like this whole process that you go through, right? For me now, it's actually seeing that other people are going through something, right? That by telling my, you know, when you read something, an experience that's so close to yours, you feel seen. And that's actually the thing that makes me keep, like, okay, it makes me want to get to the end and finish it, maybe one person will feel some, will feel seen. But in terms of the, you know, of parent support, my thoughts on this are that the field is so new and there's such a need for people who are suffering. Though that has to come first. I think that's the way I perceived it, of what's happening. It's like people are suffering. We have to help them. Parents are the, you know, parents have their part to play. Parents need to figure out how to, you know, break the system that you're in of, you know, the pattern of the reassurance seeking and reassurance giving and accommodation and all of that. But the emotional support. And then there's also OCD. I remember Ethan Smith once said, OCD is a family disorder. And it disorders the whole family, and it disorders the brain, right? We are all creatures of our neurology, our neurobiology, and it affects your own brain, right?
Yeah.
Your anxiety is up all the time, you know. One, you know, and then you develop checking behaviors that aren't necessarily OCD, but you're checking your child all the time, right? That's something like that.
Yeah.
And so there's a parallel. I mean, I kind of learned it on my own a little bit. With the help of one of the therapists at McLean, we'd have like weekly lessons. We'd have weekly lessons about parenting OCD. And when I discovered there was a little bit of a parallel process, that some of what would, for my own health and well-being, I needed to calm down my own amygdala. And if I calmed down my own amygdala, I would also be able to respond better to my daughter's OCD.
Yeah.
I say that like it's so brilliant, but you know, I'm triggered all the time.
It definitely seems like something you work out in hindsight. In the support group that I attend, we talk quite a lot about collateral damage of OCD. I was saying about my mum before. My mum, you know, is incredible. I'm really, really lucky. And she's learned more and more over the years, but really it was the strength that she showed me before she had an understanding of it, or I had an understanding of it. And I think it's a little bit different. It's a little bit different with me and with Shira, because this wasn't something that set in a visible way in childhood. But I think that one thing I do feel quite sorry for my mum for is that there's so many Christmases that, when I look back, were ruined really because I was ill. And I sometimes feel a little bit like it would really benefit my mum to know another parent of a child with OCD. I mean, I'm a man now, but you know what I mean. Do you know other parents with children with OCD?
Do I know other parents?
Yeah.
Oh yeah, many.
Right. Well, so what's that like? Because I guess that for me, in having met people. Almost having friends with OCD or peers, one of the things I love about it so much is I genuinely find people with OCD are genuinely empathetic and
sweet.
You could never say that they were boring. So, you know, it's great to have those friends, but also I don't have to explain myself and they don't have to explain themselves either. And I guess, is it similar, you know, in other parents, where you obviously don't have to do that almost education that you feel you have to do whenever you're talking about OCD?
Yeah. So I'll try to keep this concise. There's sort of three things come to mind. One, of course, when you go to OCD Con, I know that feeling, like everybody in the room knows what I'm going through. It's the same when you meet parents. And often when you meet, my experience is, this as much now, you know, but when things were really in the shitter, is it okay to swear on your podcast?
Oh, of course, yeah. everyone always asks that, and every time I say, I'm pretty sure I have clicked that button, but no, it's fine, go for it.
Anyway, it was like, you know, the stories, you know, like everyone, it's just like you're just like, and this and this and this and this, and you're just this outpouring of this happened to me and this happened to me, this happened to you and this happened to me, and just this unburdening, I think, that I felt with other parents. I'm thinking of when I met anyway, I don't want to refer to anybody specifically. That's not the right thing to do. Mostly at this point in our lives, we know families who are still going through it. And that's different, you know. And like I said, the main thing for me is just to be able to hold space for someone else. There are a few people, like I said, you know, who were able to hold space for us. We had a therapist, and then actually Shira and I lived in an inn in Massachusetts. The first time we went to McLean, because she didn't want to do residential, I actually moved out there with her. Wow. And the innkeeper was just this incredible, she was a mom. She had two special needs children, different areas. And just to feel held and seen, and to someone just to say, you're doing such a great job, you know, and please take care of yourself. And I mean, that's the most important thing. Of course, we know things and you want to share them. Like, I'm thinking of a conversation I had with a friend recently. Something came up about her daughter apologizing, and I try not to be like giving a lot of advice, right? Because no parent wants a lot of advice. But I calmly pointed out to her, said, "Oh, you know, apologizing is often a form of reassurance seeking. You should know that." I mean, I didn't know that for the longest time. So, you know, so you're kind of, you know, our position at this point is to share information, to help people get the support they need, and, you know, to be a safe container and be compassionate. You know, they always say, like, you know, it's like you write the book that you wish someone else had, that you would wish you would have to read. Yeah. You try to provide that something that you wish you had more of.
Yeah, and I also think as well that if something good can, I feel like there's something healing, without sounding too sort of namaste about it. If there's something good that can come from suffering, it's that something good can come from suffering.
Yeah. Usually something good does come from suffering. Mm-hmm. And you know, that's the way to get there. That's, you know, that said, you know, if I could, you know, if we all, I mean, we all know everyone suffers. Everyone suffers. And we can't really take that away. I mean, that's been like a painful thing, you know, because you cannot take away your, you know, your child's going to suffer no matter what. They're going to, I mean, life is painful. I mean, it's beautiful. It's both, obviously. Yes, I know that, you know, I know that OCD is a chronic brain disorder. I know that there's no cure. That said, if I can make it go away like that for my baby and for anyone else, I would.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I would.
Any parent would. But yeah, you try to make meaning out of your life. And, you know, just getting back to, you know, my daughter, you know, sort of watch her, take what she's learned and experienced and, do something good with it.
Obviously, I love my mum very much and she's fantastic, but I feel a little bit like I would quite like you to be my second mum.
I'm like Jewish mother to the world these days. Like, come over, I'll make you some chicken soup.
Yeah, I'm just not sure it would. I'm not sure the deal for you is quite as good, because I feel like having another human being with OCD in your life is probably not what you need, to be honest.
The OCD Chronicles is brought to you by sufferers of OCD, not mental health professionals. This is place to educate and inform from a perspective of lived experience, but not to advise. Thankfully, the United Kingdom is lucky enough to have two great charities for OCD and their related disorders. One is called OCD UK, the other OCD Action. I personally have found them hugely helpful in my long and storied journey with this wretched disorder. You can find them easily enough online. Solidarity with sufferers. OCD is hell, but there is hope. The OCD Chronicles is brought to you by James McMahon, that's me. It's a Spook Media production. Until next time.